Hey, this is JP. In today's episode, we're going to get into investing in multifamily properties, 5 tips for newcomers. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
JP, how are you?
We're here. I'm good, man. Although, like, I'm in this like white void of a room again, still. I'm not moved.
One of these days, you'll get moved.
I'm right there. And I feel like the guy that keeps crying wolf. Like people can ask me, say, when are you moving your house? Oh, it's like, we're almost there. We're like right there and we're not there. Mm-hmm. And then every time I go there, I'm disappointed because we're not there. And I feel like we should be there. And it creates a lot of friction in my life.
I completely understand, especially since you're in, how big is the carriage house that you're?
It's like 600 square feet with my 3 daughters and my wife. I'll step back. In the grand scheme of things, there's lots of people living in smaller spaces. Like I've seen videos of people in India living in like one room, literally of one room together. So I've got nothing to complain about, but I'm just used to something different. Yep. It's fun complaining.
All good. You know.
How are you, Matt?
Doing well. Excited. We have a big event coming up here this weekend. So
that's right. Going to NOLA.
Yeah. Get to hobnob with a bunch of new people. So it should be fun.
Yeah, totally. So listen, I was thinking for today's episode, we probably should get into, I don't know, like, let's talk about investing in multifamily properties, tips for newcomers, you know, because a lot of people that are on our channel, they're probably new to it, you know, and there's a number of things to know, some tips and secrets that we've learned along the way. We started a vertically integrated multifamily apartment real estate investment firm a number of years ago. And that sounds like a big fancy word. It basically means we buy apartments and we operate the property manager company that manages them. That's basically what it means. It sounds more fun to say vertically integrated, doesn't it?
Yep, absolutely. And you know, it's funny too, along those lines, some of the tenants, the prospects that are looking for property, they ask, is this a private owner? And I'm always taken back whenever I see that. It's an interesting question, but it's something that people want to know that it's not this huge conglomerate that
like an institution,
basically
like, you know, BlackRock.
Yeah, exactly. Where BlackRock owned there's it? nobody that's going to, help them or anything like that. So it's an interesting question that, you know, again, just seems to have popped up in the last few years that's what people ask sometimes. So,
yeah. All right. So let's get into it. We kind of made a list here. I think probably the first thing is really understanding the benefits of multifamily investments, right? And there's at least 3 things that kind of come to mind. There's kind of cash flow, economies of scale, and appreciation potential. We'll break those down individually here. But let's talk about cash flow. Cash flow is in my opinion, and in the book that I'm writing, it can be confusing because there's kind of 2 parts to it. There's cash flow of like, all right, I have rent that comes in, I have expenses, and then I've got cash flow, right? Your profits. But in apartments, we know this all too well, there's another level below that, and that's the mortgage, right? Also called debt service. So after that, and after paying some reserves and some other stuff, then you really got the cash flow, right? So cash flow is the money that an investor can expect to see as a result of operating the apartment complex, collecting the rent, paying the expenses, paying the mortgage, and then you've got cash flow, right? And that's one of the beautiful parts about it is there's consistency in that because each month you're charging rents, you're collecting those rents, and ideally the cash flow should be pretty consistent, you know, throughout all those things. I mean, there's always ups and downs and stuff, but cash flow is one of the things. Next thing is economy of scale. Matt, why don't you walk us through, you know, economies of scale and how that means in this economy?
Yeah. So when you look at making your investments, a lot of people love single family investing, right? So you have to think about, you have one roof, one furnace, you know, one set of plumbing, one hot water tank, plus you have, you know, different locations all located all over the place. So it's going to take more time to be able to go around and fix things, follow up with things, you know, so economies of scale essentially means we're going to compact all of that where maybe you have, you know, 5 hot water tanks that's serving, you know, 70 homes in this instance,
units.
Right?
It's called units.
Yeah, units, yeah. Right? You have one roof that's over those 70 units. There's, you know, and there's one building all serving, you know, 70 units. You go to that one location and you can collect 70 rents rather than having to drive all over the city and collect 70 different, you know, checks or money orders or what have you from 70 different locations. So that's what economies of scale means, is just, you know, being able to maximize your capability by having a larger footprint all in one location.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Next, let's go into appreciation potential. I'll say that again more slowly. Appreciation potential. And that, I think, you know, for me, when I was getting into learning how real estate, how apartment works, how apartments work, is the really the big game changer, because apartments or commercial real estate is not valued the same way that residential real estate is. It's based on its profitability, right? It's cash flow, the word that we used earlier on, which really is called the NOI, or net operating income. So the more the NOI is, the greater the property can be valued at. I'll give you a case in point here. We forced depreciation on our largest apartment complex that we own in a suburb of Cleveland called Shaker Heights. We bought it for $16.5 million 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago or so. And in renovating the units, making them nicer, bringing in a better clientele, all of those things, improving the operations. What did it appraise for, Matt, when we refinanced the property?
Just over $30 million.
Just over $30 million. So in a period of about 2.5 years, we almost doubled the appreciation, the value of the property. And you know, we're able to pull out some cash from that refinance, pay off our old loan, and be able to pay off some of our debts and give some money to investors. It's been kind of wonderful. And that's really where a lot of the magic happens, in being able to force appreciation. Would you agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. Definitely.
Awesome. All right, cool. All right, let's get into the next one. So the next one is choosing the right location. And this is really, really critical. I mean, for me, when I was in the early stages of learning about real estate, one of the books that were really influential for me was this book called Emerging Markets by Dave Lindahl. And that was a book where I literally was so excited to read it. I read it from cover to cover in one sitting, went to like a Whole Foods, get out of the house, be quiet. I was absorbing. You know, when you find those books that you're like, yes, I feel like I'm just receiving the truth. And in that, what I found was so amazing was like, it's so right there. It's so obvious. It's like this idea that if you stack up the demographics, the demand, all in a way that it helps to mitigate risk, reduce risk, that's how you really help ensure that your investment is a smart investment, not like a gamble. Would you, you know, what was it like for you when you sort of realized the importance of choosing the right location? We can even talk about Shaker as a result.
Yeah, I mean, Shaker is a perfect example of that. I would say that some of the things that I learned early on that I wasn't necessarily considering, but makes a complete amount of sense, right? There's certain retailers and certain you know, businesses that are in areas that are probably not great to invest in, right? Like cashing places and some of the fast food type restaurants.
Yeah. Dollar General.
Yeah, Dollar Generals. Yeah. If you see a lot of those, and you can zoom right in on Google and see what types of establishments are around your potential investment, it's a great way to be able to pick out like, okay, this might not be that great of an area that I want invest in.
It's a good barometer.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And obviously these large companies, I mean, Dollar General's, you know, multi-billion-dollar year company, they obviously do the research and figure out, okay, this is going to be a good location to put one of our stores in because of the demographics around there. So
that's right.
So capitalize on the research that somebody else has already done.
Bingo.
And, you know, pick your places accordingly.
That's right. No, that's perfect. That's perfect. And then market trends. You know, the other piece too about this is, for us as apartment operators, the market trends are in our favor right now with respect to like younger generation and older generation retirees. They don't want to live in a house anymore. It's too much work. It's expensive. And I'm tied down to a house, right? But an apartment gives me freedom, gives me flexibility. I can break my lease. I can go a 6-month lease or, you know, whatever. And so when you've got a lot of those trends in your favor, again, that's wind on your back, you know, pushing you in the right direction. I think that, again, helps to minimize and mitigate risk when making an investment, because again, the name of the game should be making smart investments, not taking a gamble, right? And so we'll jump into the third part, which is due diligence and property analysis. And I'll let you talk about this because you have a lot of experience doing this, you know, as the guy running our operations piece of the business here. So, you know, under due diligence and property analysis, there is physical inspection. There's some financial analysis, and I could talk about any legal considerations. So why don't you talk about the physical inspection aspect?
Yeah. So obviously you want to, before you get into investing into an opportunity, you want to go and make sure that you understand what types of conditions all of these different homes are in, so that you know what you're going to be purchasing, right? Some of the things that, you know, we're looking at is obviously the structure of the buildings. You know, are there cracks in the foundation, cracks along the wall, right? A lot of these older buildings are all brick. So, you know, you see large cracks running up the wall. Chances are, if you see that, there could be some expensive foundational problems that might be there. Another thing is validating the, so when we're going through and doing the initial due diligence, the seller will send over the rent roll to us, right? And part of that rent roll is going to encapsulate how large each one of these units are, right? So you want to understand, I'm buying this unit. You want to know how large these units are so that you can determine what can I actually get for this particular unit, right? So breaking down the price per square foot so that you're comparing what your competition is getting, who might have larger units. Maybe they're, $1.30 per square foot, but they are also, they're getting, call it $1,500 for their rent, but their unit might be larger. So you want to multiply your unit size, times that particular square footage price, and you want to verify that what is on the rent roll is actually what the unit size is. We've seen this, time and time again, where the rent rolls are inflating the size of the unit, which then throws the whole thing out of whack, right? You might think that larger units than what you do. I'm trying to think. Obviously, unit conditions. Do you need to replace cabinets? Are there leaks? Is there holes in drywall? Just documenting all of that and getting a handle on what needs to be done is all part of that due diligence inspection process.
That's right. And you blended some of the financial analysis in there too. And the financial analysis really comes down to what is called underwriting. And that is more of an art, less than a science. I mean, it can be a science, but really isn't. It's an art. It's being able to kind of take data about a property and to kind of break that down for those that don't know what underwriting is. It basically means you're going to take the financials from the property, the income statement, how much rent's collecting, what the expenses are each month. It's usually an Excel spreadsheet. You're going to take, you're going to study the market, see where you can push the rents, the marketplace, put in a big spreadsheet model, and you take educated guesses. You make some assumptions on, okay, it's making $1 million a year right now. I think I can get it to 1.5 million, 2 million, three, whatever the number is. And that's basically it. That's a skill that takes a lot of time, a lot of reps to kind of to get out there and improve that. And the last piece here is legal considerations, right? Making sure that there aren't any zoning issues. That is one of these things where when you're buying a large property, the banks take care of that, but that is part of that your attorneys and the banks, they are all in on that as part of the process. So it really is something that is obviously important, but we've got a team of experts that we work with that we hire to help make sure that we're in the best legal standing. There aren't any liens, things like that,
Yep. Absolutely.
And so let's jump into number four here, as a list of five. And this is really on the financing of multifamily properties, right? There's really three points to that. There's the down payment. There's different loan options that we can do, and then kind of cash reserve. So I'll jump into the first two, and Matt will talk about the cash reserve. So down payment, the reason why multifamily works is we're able to get commercial loans. These commercial loans are better than residential loans. The rates are lower typically. And I guess more importantly, they are typically non-recourse, meaning the people who sign on the loan, Matt and I, were not legally liable for going after the paying mortgage. So if they had to foreclose on the property, the asset itself, the property itself is used as collateral, not us. Now, it doesn't mean we can walk away and do whatever we want. There's a lot of implications there, but compared to a residential mortgage where, you are personally liable for that, you've got to pay that sort of thing. So the down payment, generally, when you're taking these loans out, are anywhere from 20-25% of the total purchase price. That's usually how that works. And then as far as loan options go, there's a variety of these. The type of deals that we do, you can finance it with a government loan, government-backed loan, like a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan. But a lot of the deals that we do require a lot of work. And so we take out these bridge loans, bridging you from where you are today, where the property's at today, to where you want to get it to, which is a lower cost Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan. So having different loan options out there allow you to get creative depending on the property, depending on the business plan and what you need to do to turn it around, right? Matt, why don't you talk us through some of the cash reserve aspects on a property and what that actually means?
Yeah, so cash reserves basically is what you want to make sure that you are setting aside to be able to take care of the things that go bump in the night. If there's always going to be things that break or unexpected roof leaks or, you know, who knows? Being in this business...
You mean people don't expect to have roof leaks?
Yeah. Being in this business, I can't even tell you some of the things that you run into that you would think like, how the hell did we get here? Like, this is...
Do you want to talk about the shitter?
I don't remember the one. I'm sure there's been plenty of shitters that have been problematic. Like, for instance, we ran into an issue last winter, which I'm sure everyone remembers this. It was on Christmas Eve. It dropped to like minus 60 in Cleveland, and the buildings in this area are not meant for that, right? And this is a whole region. This is not just the Cleveland area. This is the entire like 2-3 states, all were going through this. So we had breaks in the water lines or water lines that froze, which then split. And you know, we had tenants that didn't have water because we had to turn off the water because it's spraying all over the place. Then we can't find plumbers because the entire region has these issues going on. So, you know, things like that, we had to basically pay cash, which we pulled from our reserve accounts. Insurance ultimately ended up covering all of that, but we needed to get contractors there ASAP.
Yep.
And, you know, these guys were basically naming their price at this point where, you know, if you didn't have cash, if you weren't paying right on the spot, they were like, well, I'll just go, you know, to the next phone call that, you know, the 30 or 40 that I have in my phone, I'll go help them. So, so fortunately we had the cash to be able to get somebody there as soon as possible. But even that, we still had buildings that didn't have water in them for a couple of days.
That's right.
You can imagine what the temperament was for the customers, our members, our tenants that are living there.
Yeah.
They were not happy. And, you know, you can't tell people we're doing the best that we can. They don't want to hear it. It doesn't make any difference to them.
Yep.
Right? So, that's one of those things that you want to make sure that you have the cash available so that when things go bump in the night, you have the ability to be able to, tap into those. And as a rule of thumb, so we typically when we're doing these renovation properties, we will also finance these reserves when we purchase the property. So there'll be a CapEx reserve, and that's for all of the things that we found during due diligence. You know, we want to update this many units. We want to replace the carpet in this hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything that we end up finding, right?
Yep.
So, we have that. But what we also do is we'll set aside about $300 or so per unit per year to handle those things that might pop up unexpectedly. So that's kind of what we target to be able to set aside as those as those reserves that we need to just run the property and handle those issues.
That's right. That's right. So that brings us to our last piece of the puzzle here, which are management considerations. And I think, you know, the context for this, at least for our channel, is to kind of help people understand how real estate works, how investing in real estate works, specifically apartments, and really the pros and cons between being an active investor and a passive investor. And for us, we run a business where we raise capital from passive investors. So of course, we're going to be a little biased in our recommendation that, you know, I think half the battle is going in eyes wide open, right? And so for a lot of people that suddenly get the bug, they know they need to be in real estate, they want to invest in real estate, I don't think they fully appreciate how much freaking work it takes to be an investor in real estate. And there is a better way. You totally can have your cake and eat it too. You can invest money. You can have it make money for you. It could make returns and appreciate and get, you know, pay less taxes on it, all those things. Also, you don't have to do anything, but you're not required to do it unless, of course, you want the job, then in which case, by all means. So this idea on self-managed versus hiring property management is a big deal. And it's a big deal because we lived through all. I've owned single-family rentals. I've owned small apartment complexes, 12-unit. We've owned big ones, 278-unit. We've managed our own. We've worked with third parties. And I'll tell you, single-family one sucked to manage, 12-unit. Sucked to manage third party. Managing it ourselves sucks less. And really where it happens is on the bigger properties. And so, Matt, why don't you explain that before we go into tenant relationships and maintenance and upkeep, and then we will end this video.
Yeah, excellent. So when you are getting involved in this, you want to pay attention to the number of units that you're investing in. Because again, this gets back to the economies of scale.
Yep.
If you have too small of a property, that property essentially, it's going to be you that's going to be managing it, because you can't afford to pay somebody to, you know, go and show the units or
and that's do not all the passive repairs. Investing.
Yeah, that's what you're basically signing up for, unless you're. I would say, and I've actually had conversations with people just recently where this line is. Some newer people. We did it with about 55 units, where we made that flip from. We were third party. We had a third party managing right. that originally, and then we took that on ourselves. And I don't know that you could probably can't go too much lower than that.
No.
Where the property
really, be able to we really can't even do it at that number. Like
Well,
we didn't want to deal with a headache.
Exactly. Well, so we affectionately called that place Cash Mahal because it did cash flow very, very well. So.
Yeah.
In that situation, it was a unique property that probably allowed us to, squeeze by with a third party property management and ultimately bringing in underneath us.
Yeah.
But again, if you're looking at doing this with a 12 unit or 20 unit, it sounds great and you think that those buildings are big, and when you're first starting out, that's certainly is understandable, but they are not big enough to be able to support a team, support a crew. So you always, in our opinion, you always want to make sure that you're going after property that can at least support a team. So that way, then it's not us, JP and I actually going there and showing units and all of that. Not saying that that doesn't happen where we have to fill in a pinch, but, for the most part, we're able to hire a team and, they're able to handle all of the stuff that you have to do on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So the last two pieces, tenant relationships and maintenance and upkeep. So I'll finish this up. So tenant relationships, we don't call our renters tenants. We call them members. There's a whole story behind that. It's beyond the scope of this call, but for us, tenant relationships, member relationships are really, really important. It's one of our unique differentiators in the very crowded marketplace. And so what that basically means is you want to have a good relationship with people living there. They feel welcomed and they feel like they're being treated well. There's a higher likelihood they're going to stay longer, because one of the biggest costs in running an apartment complex is vacancies. So when no one's in there, no one's paying rent. So you want to keep them there as long as possible. And by doing that, to do that, you make them happy, which leads us to our next piece, which is maintenance and upkeep. Having a service team that's responsive and communicative is also really important, because at least being able to say, hey, Mrs. Smith, I saw that you called. I know your toilet's leaking. We'll be there as soon as I can, right? I'll be there tomorrow at 2:00. That is half the battle. We've run into a lot of properties where the maintenance team, they're not able to do that. They're unable to do that, or they don't want to do that. And it creates this combative dynamic that happens between the people that live there and the service team. And then when the leasing agents go in there and say, hey, the rent is due on the first, people that live there are like, screw you. Like, where were you to fix my problem that I had 3 weeks ago? Right, Matt? And so like, that's a big deal. And I think that's an area that we try to focus on, because we realize it is a big deal. It impacts the living experience living there. And ultimately, we want to keep people happy. We want to keep them there for a long time. Any last thoughts on those two pieces before we conclude today's call?
No, I think you pretty well summed it up there.
A little bow on top. So with that, Matt, it was a great chat with you on this, and I will see you in a few days.
Yes. Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Thanks so much.
See ya.
Bye. Hey, if you found this video useful, go ahead and subscribe to our channel for more.